What's going on, everybody, and welcome to the Ask a CISP podcast. So this is a weekly episode of The Other Side of the Firewall, where we talk about the latest and greatest in cybersecurity news, as well as we highlight those movers and shakers and glass ceiling breakers, those people of color who've made it to the other side of the proverbial firewall. With me today is Jacob Hill. So Jacob, I've been following your content. He's not only a subject matter expert in the CMMC space, so 2.0 rolling out. He has a GRC Academy where he's doing training, as well as just kind of being a champion of all of this new regulation and what's coming down the pipe. He also has a background in NIST, ISO as well, CMMC, of course, like RMF in general. Like, you are a subject matter expert in the space. And now you're also a podcaster. So hopefully you're not critiquing me throughout this, because you run a really, really good podcast. Mm-hmm. So what I want to do is I want to jump into your background, your cybersecurity origin story, and then from there we can talk about your experience.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you, Ryan. I really appreciate you inviting me on, and I'm going to learn from you today. So I'm excited. As we were saying, I mean, it's always, you know, always getting better. But anyway, yes, I started out my career back in 2008, at the young fresh age of 18, 19, something like that.
All right.
And I've always been around DoD, you know, around supporting in one way or another. And back then I was supporting the MRAP program. So those big trucks that were meant to counter the IED threat that our folks were facing over there. And I was doing IT support. And so starting out so young, I was challenged. You know what I'm saying? Because some folks didn't feel like somebody so young should be doing that role. There was a Marine in particular, a retired Marine, and he said, "They hired you? Well, that was a mistake," you know? But I proved myself to them. My dad, he was a land administrator at the same company, and that was my entryway into the position. And so what he told me is, well, Jacob, what you need to do is, it was a small, you know, 20, 30 people, a very small office location. And he said, every day I want you to walk the floor and just ask people, do you need anything? You know, and so that level of customer service, I think, and, you know, I smile all the time. So, I mean, that probably helps a little bit. But I think that level of customer service kind of elevated, you know, myself and in their mind above maybe what they've seen before, you know, that type
right.
of thing.
And leaving that great impression with them.
Yeah, exactly. And so after that, I went over to support Marine Corps Systems Command in an IT kind of role as well. And this was actually on Marine Corps Base Quantico, where I got to meet a lot of different people. I mean, you know, I didn't go everywhere on Base Quantico, but I went many places and got to meet a lot of different folks. And at that point, they were kind of going on a hiring spree on the government side. Mm-hmm. And so I got to jump in with the government on the civilian side, where I got to do a lot of different interesting things. And I will say, the one thing that helped me get that job was, at my first position, where I was starting out so young, I was able to get a letter of recommendation from a very senior person, right? And so, awesome. Yeah, that was amazing. And I brought that to my interview with the government. And looking back, the gentleman who was on the other side of the desk, he's probably skeptical. But then I said, "Hey, I know this gentleman." He was like, "Oh, you know him? I know him too."
Okay. Right.
And so that helped. And that got me in the door. And I got to do a lot of different things, IT procurement, going through the Marine Corps process for tactical. And then also they made me a project manager in a corps as well. And so got to be exposed to, you know, contracting officers and all that, you know, DAU training, Defense Acquisition University, and things like that.
Yeah, very familiar. Right.
Yeah. I got my feet wet in a lot of different areas. So then I jumped into another role, same command, but this was in an office, basically reviewing all the ATO packages that were going up to the, back then it was DICAP, which, I mean, I wish I could say I was involved with DITSCAP. I listened to someone on your podcast who was in the DITSCAP days, but I didn't go that far back.
I think that was Yvonne Rivera, actually.
Yes, yep. Yes. But it was in the DICAP days, and at that point, the AO, the DAA, as it was called then. He was going by the AO, you know, forward leaning into RMF. And so I got exposed into that side of things. Now, I wasn't immediately jumping into the heavy, you know, information assurance, cybersecurity reviews, but I got to work in that office. And then I got into that, you know, doing some of those reviews and things like that. So I got to see a lot of different programs, a lot of different things. Being over an entire acquisition command, you got to see a lot of different variety. Right. So then I decided, well, you know, the government, good job, but if you want to make the money, you got to jump out. You know, young family, all that. So I said, okay, I'm going to jump back into private industry, and then
okay. So before we move on to there. Yeah. I just wanted to highlight a couple points that you brought up. So, sure. So one being having the ability to jump in at such an early age. So I usually steer people towards the military whenever I talk to somebody who's trying to break in. They're kind of either about to graduate high school or they're early in their college years. I'll try to push them like, hey, you should be an officer or warrant or something like that. I never really tell people to look for federal contracting and or the government civilian space. And I should do that more often, but it's just something I'm not so familiar with. So mm-hmm. for you, kind of moving into that space. So we know the transition was you making the good impression, you making those connections that ultimately helped you to get into the government space. But for the contracting space, how was that process? Like, so if somebody wants to jump in at 18 or 19, mm-hmm. What type of hoops would they have to overcome, I guess?
Yeah. Well, I guess I had a little bit of a different type of background because I was homeschooled throughout the entire time of my gotcha. Schooling, and then jumping into college, you know, did the actually was, you know, driving from home to the college, then coming back and then working. And so I pretty much worked through my entire college career, I suppose. Which that was a very busy time, and I don't want to go back to that at all.
Right.
I remember being so tired, but that's a whole nother story. But yes, I think, and I've thought about this too, because I remember back in the day, you know, I lived out in the country and we had terrible internet connectivity. You know, gotcha. we were relegated to cellular or satellite internet and just trying to play the games and like 8-second lag or whatever. It's just funny thinking back about it. But these days, I mean, everybody has a computer, everybody has a device on their, you know, on their wrist or whatever. It's just so ubiquitous. So I think something that can trip up kids these days, especially if they're very, very interested in computer science, mm-hmm. is they can get into trouble. Right. At quite an early age, you know, maybe, true, right? You know, whether it's hacking or, you know, things like that. So obviously you have to clear the security clearance thing. So that could be a challenge for some folks. But like, I don't know, it's just an interesting problem. And also, I think about it just from being so comfortable with technology. I think maybe younger people coming on don't realize the risks involved, too. You know what I'm saying? Of just having a system that you right. use to process sensitive data. So, I mean, there's a few things I'm thinking there, if right. that makes
no,
any sense.
No, understood. Yeah, you see it in some of the younger, like, officers and things of that nature. You'll see them make those type of mistakes as well. So you transition into it at a very early age. You're working Marine, so I mean that gives you tough skin off the bat. The joke is some of my best friends are this or that. So, but I've met a lot of really great Marines. I actually have not met any that are not great, but they are a little rough, so to speak. So that's good. You're battle tested. You're performing that service. That's most likely you being able to perform such a great service, make them feel comfortable with you, to allow you to help them, and then being recommended. So yeah, that definitely would work in your favor into the transition.
Yes.
So you said then you were in the government sector. So I think around the time that you were in the government sector is when I saw a pretty big exodus on our side. So I saw a lot of young lieutenants and captains mm-hmm. who had RMF experience mm-hmm. were punching right and left mm-hmm. because, like you said, the money was on the outside. So they were the same people. Like Captain So-and-so would be on the job. Mm-hmm. He would have like a very short career, maybe 4 to 6 years, he or she. And then I would see them as a civilian, like weeks later, mm-hmm. when they're back in the AO office, mm-hmm. Doing the what is it, authorization to connect or approval to operate and run RMF packages. But their pay, even from OPAY, their pay doubled.
Yeah.
So it was a no-brainer. So like you saying that you moved from the government sector into private sector makes perfect sense, especially during that time.
Yeah, I had a buddy who worked for one of the three-letter agencies, like, you know, the hacking people. And mm-hmm. he said that he doubled his salary just going from the government side to the contractor side.
Right, it's pretty ridiculous.
There's benefits to be on the government side because you do have more control. You can do certain things that a contractor can't. But
right,
sometimes, man, you just need that money, you know?
No, I understood. There are pros and cons. So let's kind of go over those real quick, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
So I've never been a government civilian, but I worked with a lot of them. And now I'm a federal contractor. So I do have some of that experience. But when it comes to pay, you're absolutely right. Like when you look at the GS charts versus the enlisted and officer charts versus what they're paying people in the private sector, apples and oranges. But yeah, as you did say, like a government civilian does have pull though. Like if you want to have a say so,
yeah,
I'm sure you felt you have more control as a government civilian than you were as a contractor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I'll give you a good example. So when I became a project officer over this web application system, the person I had replaced, essentially when I came in and replaced her, she said, "I deleted everything. I don't have anything for you." You know, so that was a huge, huge challenge.
Okay.
To come in, and I learned a lot. You know, I mean, sometimes that's the way you got to learn. But right. And then the other thing I thought about that was that, wow, so she had this level of knowledge, and so how can I ever have as much as she did? You know, even if I'm at 100%, I'm, right, you know, 60% of her 100 or whatever. But in any case, what I was able to do is I was really able to drive the train for that web application. And because the contract had a certain scope to it, right? But I was in charge of saying, all right, contractor, this is what I want the system to do. You know, and they could say, well, here's my ideas. Here's if this is a good idea or a bad idea. But at the ultimate, right, the ultimate say was mine, you know. And for me, I mean, that was exciting, you know, because I saw this web application from the user standpoint on the government side, like, if we can only fix this, it would be so much better. And then I got put in the driver's seat, you know, and being able to make that change happen. And the contractor, of course, was just, you know, just kind of at the mercy of the project officer at the time. And right, so I was able to fix it. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't stay in the role long enough to truly fix it, but I feel like I was able to have a positive impact. And then that's when I jumped into the cybersecurity compliance. Right. Side.
You left it better than you found it, which is always the best feeling per se, especially coming from like the enlisted side, like working on something, actually seeing it come to fruition and then taking off from there. Like, yeah, I did that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely get the pro of moving to the contracting side. So with that being said, so on the contracting side, what were those things that you learned on the civilian side that led you to say, okay, I can do this myself. I can be an entrepreneur. I can start my own thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so I still have the day job where I'm just was actually promoted to the executive vice president of cybersecurity, compliance, and technology. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that was a big step. And so right now I'm dual hatting it, right? And so gotcha. I have the day job, and then I have GRC Academy, which I launched probably January of last year. And so I think, you know, and you would like to say that you knew you had this master plan and, you know, you saw this huge need and, you know, but I think what it came down to, and just to give you a little bit of history. So my brother, Paul, he has a IT learning platform called serveracademy.com. He had put out a ton of Udemy courses, you know, probably 13, 14, something like that, and has been very successful over the years. And then he launched his own learning platform. And so I had a web design, web hosting company for maybe 6 or 7 years now. And so I was helping him with some of his stuff, right? And then I got the idea of, well, you know, there's not much training out there for CMMC for defense contractors. There's, you know, it seemed like the focus was on assessors and consultants rather than defense contractors who actually need to comply. So I said, okay, well, let's see what we can do with this. And originally, I was going to put it out on Udemy, which, I mean, everybody knows it's one of the biggest online learning platforms out there. Yeah, yeah. But then I decided, well, I know it's going to be more work. I know that it's going to be a lot more hours, but let's build my own platform and let's see what we can do. And I'm really glad I made that decision. And like I said, I would love to say I had all this planned, you know, well ahead of time. Right. And I don't know, it seems like most people who, I mean, I haven't made a big yet, hopefully one day, you know, but, you know, it seems that most don't have everything planned at all.
Right. And I think that's a good point to bring up, especially for people who are kind of thinking like, okay, well, I have an idea or I have an outline of something I want to do, but I don't quite, it's not quite there yet. But yeah. I think coming from like straight from, you know, the quote unquote horse's mouth, it's an opportunity. You have an opportunity and you can do something with it. And please go ahead.
Yeah, and something else, I remember talking to my wife about this, was that I had done a lot with my main company, TechFused LLC, that really wasn't very profitable. It was a lot of hours, web design and web hosting and things like that. It ultimately wasn't very profitable. I put out a course, like a web design-oriented course, very niche, on Udemy. That really wasn't profitable either. However, this, I think, has a ton of potential. And sometimes that's how it is. You build up to that right. big thing that happens, you know, and I think I'm on to it. So I'm very excited about it.
Right. No, I absolutely do think you're on to it. Because I can't remember how I stumbled across GRC Academy, to be honest with you. I'm not sure if you just popped my timeline or if someone else, it probably was engagement. It probably was someone else either liked, shared, or commented about about the academy and the training that they were doing for CMMC. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like in a beta or kind of trying to test the waters.
Yeah.
And whenever I see anything on LinkedIn, I always throw my name in the hat just because there's going to be 1,000 people who are going to try to reach out to you. Mm-hmm. But just to see if a connection could be made or to see if I could just to win the training, which I did. And it was phenomenal. So I was like, oh man, this is great. Like, and then a little bit of background. So I was familiar with CMMC. I actually was trying to pitch it to a couple different companies during my skill grids. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, listen, I understand this thing is coming up. It's a little bit in the distance, mm-hmm. but I can help you kind of build towards it. I know a little bit, but I can learn a lot to try to help you a lot. Mm-hmm. But there was no real urgency. So there was no real teeth behind it mm-hmm. until I would say probably a year and a half ago, maybe. Mm-hmm. And that's when I saw your training. I was like, it's perfect timing. Because at the time when I was active duty, the Air Force was pushing some CUI training, CUI, some mm-hmm. FCI training. But we're still confused. Like I understood the concept because I worked with the IA guys, but for a normal user, they're like, what is this? Like everything's FOUO. Like, what are you talking about? Like there was really no
right
background or history to it. It was just like, hey, here's mandatory training. Like this needs to be done every year on mm-hmm. this month because you did it this month. Mm-hmm. There was really no understanding of what it was. So when I took your course, I was like, this actually makes sense. I actually understand what this purpose is for.
Oh, that's awesome.
So how did you come about? So You've done training in the past. So you said you built a course and you're kind of, these are stepping blocks. Like you're learning how to build the training, you're conducting the training. And now you're like, I want to own the product from cradle to grave. I want to own this. Mm-hmm. How did you know it was good when you put it out there?
That was the key, man, because it was nerve wracking putting it out. I remember seeing some of these posts that people would put out and they were wrong or put out bad information.
Oh, okay.
And people would just destroy them. Oh man. So I didn't want to be that guy. I was pretty nervous to put it out. And I, you know, I had spent over 300 hours on the course, just ton of research. I learned a lot creating the course myself. And so I learned a ton, but I still wanted to make sure everything was, you know, as correct as possible, or 100%, right, or very close to it. So what I did is I met some folks on LinkedIn, and one in particular, Miss Corinne Wise. She is a CMMC instructor, assessor, consultant, right, and then Mr. Paul Vinneman on LinkedIn as well. I had them peer review the course, and I got just excellent feedback. And they, you know, they told me some things that they noticed here and there, and I was like, okay, let's fix those things. But this is awesome. Right. Like, this is great. I'm getting great feedback from people who, you know, this right. stuff. Oh, that's as well. Awesome. Yeah. So, yeah. And so that helped me out a ton, because I was extremely nervous to put it out.
Right.
Just put it out to the world wide web, and just see what happens. And so do the peer review at the beginning was a huge confidence booster.
That's awesome. So did you know them pretty well to ask for the peer review, or did you just say, hey, I follow you, I know your content, I think you'd be a good mentor to go through it and let me know what you think?
If I remember right, I had been posting on LinkedIn about CMMC stuff, and I had seen them, if I remember correctly, I had seen them also maybe interacting with the comments, certainly Corinne.
Gotcha.
And so I'm still, you know, I'm still trying to figure out sometimes, you know, who are the good folks, who do I want to work with, right. But I was able to identify those folks as, all right, you know, I feel like I could trust them. Let's go do it.
No, that's awesome. Because I think you led me to Ms. Wise, I think, because mm-hmm. I asked you, like, hey, who should I go to start training, which I have not started yet.
So, yeah.
I'm just trying to be more intentful with my content, which yeah. takes a lot of time, right? So I'm yes. trying to build some efficiencies in there. But at some point, I want to circle back around, because not only is it the hot topic right now, but it's the future, right? Like, if I want to be good at my craft as an assessor, I already do the NIST, I already do the ISOs. I need to definitely get into CMMC, especially if I want to help small to mid-sized businesses, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if I want to get them on their feet, I need to get pretty in the weeds with CMMC. So I'm working towards it, but you're already there, right? So I see you already have your CCP.
Uh-huh.
I believe I got the acronym correct.
Yes.
There's a lot of, like, when I left the military, I didn't know I'd have as many acronyms to learn as when I was in the military. But there are CCP, CCAs, ROs, and what's the other one?
There's CCAs, RPs, RPAs,
RPA.
And then the whole C3PAO and
right.
all the acronym soup.
Right. There's a ton there to unpack. And then when you look at the AB, Cyber AB's website, they do a pretty good job now, but originally yeah. They had a diagram that looked like Candyland. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, or Chutes and Ladders. It kind of showed the path and it was kind of windy. And I was like, I have no clue what to do with this. But no, since then, they've done an excellent job of kind of breaking it down. I think you had Justin Horn on your show.
Yeah, Jacob Horn, yes.
Jacob Horn, I'm sorry. Jacob yeah. Horn, which I should know his name, because he actually worked the same organization I worked at one point.
Oh, really?
Small World. And I saw some of the Summit 7 guys in Alabama, and some of them knew people I knew from my previous organization.
It is a small world, isn't it?
It's a very small world. It's crazy. with the Academy, so you have the training, you have people go through the training to vet it. You're getting as well as some really good training that's been peer reviewed, right? How did you move forward from there? Because I know you guys are doing a lot more now.
Yeah. So really, I think the path was release the CMMC training, try to build the audience, try to build people and brand awareness, really. I mean, when you have a new platform, that isn't OpenAI or ChatGPT.
Right.
When it's just me over in my little corner, getting people to come to me is the next challenge. So I think really it was building brand awareness. And the podcast is part of that, definitely. You know,
right.
Because that's awesome. I like you, Ryan. I just love doing the podcast, because I get to talk to a lot of people who would normally never talk to me. You know?
I know what you're saying. Yeah. You're like, I'm making all these friends.
Right. And you know, those connections, I mean, you never know what might come from those. And so that's awesome too. But in any case, free content through the podcast. And then also I built some security control explorers out of my website for CMMC for 800.171, of course, and then I'll probably put one out there for NIST CSF as well, now that NIST CSF 2.0 is out.
Right.
But having the web design and web hosting background, like I have SEO, search engine optimization, running around in my brain, and how I can possibly get people to come to the website. And so the Security Control Explorers was one way, you know, provide a really nice tool, you know, a free tool that people can utilize. And then really the next part was to build partnerships. And so I partnered with the DVMS Institute, now through Solutions Cube. They're like a strategic sales affiliate. And so I'm able to offer their NIST cybersecurity framework oriented training. And then I just recently partnered with PCB, which funny story. I always read it as PCB. And then I heard PCB. Yeah. And then my wife was saying, no, it's PCB. No, don't say it. PCB.
Funny.
Yeah. But now I'm offering their ISO 27, the lead auditor, lead implementer training, because the reality is right now with just doing the day job and GRC Academy, man, my time is limited. You know what I'm saying? To develop more content is difficult. Now, the one thing I did recently was I was able to build a 800 CMMC awareness course, which is a tailored derivative, a shorter version for executives, you know, that type of thing. Okay. So that was awesome. And I think that's going to be pretty big for those who don't need the, you know, in the weeds details and all that. But also I have the training out on GSA Advantage. So that means the government can buy it if they wish. Okay. And so I've had some conversations that hopefully something will come out and I can educate the government workforce as well, you know, so who knows what might happen with that. And then I'm making some partnerships.
DAU, and that would be humongous.
Right. And that's another aspect that I've learned. It's really good to go to in-person conferences because sometimes you just have to make that face-to-face connection.
That's what you're saying, right?
Oh man, because like if you just try to reach out to people on LinkedIn, oftentimes their inboxes get pounded and pounded, and they don't know who you are. And they're just like, okay, you're another CMMC guy. Right. So like, I think making face-to-face connections is so helpful.
No, that's smart. As well as a lot of people only use it. We use the platform every day, but there's a ton of people who only use it when they're job searching. Mm-hmm. So like their accounts just pretty much go dead until they're onto the next thing. And then they boot it back up.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and so I have some partnerships that I'm extremely excited about. Some will be closing here pretty soon that I can't wait to announce.
Okay.
And so it's all this. I worked so hard last year on marketing, building the brand. And so finally, some people are, seeing what I've done and like, wow, that looks interesting. And I'm seeing that it's good stuff. So let's talk. So that's it. You know, it's a hard work, a lot of long hours, a lot of weekends and evenings and holidays. And in fact, with the December 2023 rule coming out for CMMC, I spent a lot of I had a 2-week vacation and much of it was spent, you know, reading the rule and prepping to update the course, which took a lot longer than I wanted it to, but finally got it out in early February, the update. So. But I think it's going to be a big year. I'm really excited about it.
No, that's good, and that's a good and like behind the curtain look for those who want to pursue entrepreneurship. Everyone that I talk to who's currently starting a business or running their business, they're all busy people. Mm-hmm. So it's good to share that with the audience. Like if this is something that you're passionate about doing, it's not to discourage you from doing it. Like absolutely start a business. Yeah. I mean that's the American principle. It's just be prepared to, like you said, you're going to work long hours, you're going to work weekends, you're going to work through holidays. And then, like I tell people who are exiting the military, you're already doing that. So it's a matter of, you know, reclaiming some of your time, but you understand that sacrifice. So it might be an easier transition.
Yeah.
Or it might just completely turn you off because you're tired of doing it.
But somebody I work with told me something that really struck me. And he said that, because I was talking to just different things, and I was saying, man, you know, not everybody wants to work two jobs. And he was like, well, Jacob, you're not. You're working a day job, and then you're building your business, and it's something you own. And I was like, that's true. That's a great point.
Right. No, that's awesome. So when it comes to the podcast, so we can go there. So like you said, it's an extension of the academy. It's helping you build your brand. You get to talk to cool people and build that brand awareness. You have a really good podcast. So I think I've probably told you this in the past through post and engagement. But I just recently listened to an episode, and I can't say the doctor's name. I just won't be able to pronounce it.
Ragu.
There you go. Dr. Ragu, I think close.
For sure, yes.
But it was awesome. So I literally was going to go mow, and I was like, I need something to listen to. And I saw that you had a new episode. So I was like, I'm popping right on. Very interesting.
Yeah.
It didn't overstay its welcome. The guest was very knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys had a really good rapport between the two of you. So how long have you been podcasting, and kind of what is, like, why are you so good at it? Asking for a friend, right?
I don't think I'm very good at it, but thank you.
It was really good. Yeah, it was really good.
thank you for that. I really appreciate that. Yeah, I watched my early stuff. I mean, really, the first podcast I did was in March of last year.
Oh wow, okay.
And like, I can definitely see I've improved a lot, you know, because at first, like, oh, camera, great, you know. Here's where I'm at. I've gotten pretty decent, pretty comfortable talking to people. Talking to the camera when I'm by myself is totally different for some reason. And
I hate it with a passion. I mean, the previous week I was by myself because of a scheduling conflict. It's like talking into a vacuum. And I taught online. So I taught hybrid. I had people in class and people online as an adjunct. But we had a couple classes where COVID shut us down. So you're like, well, the show must go on. But I can't force the students to have their cameras on. I can't force them to respond. And then they're happy to not be face to face. They're like,
of course.
So it's like talking into space.
Yeah.
I can't stand it. So when I do have a solo episode, I'm like, oh, here goes all the uhs and ums and rights. It's going to be a nightmare to edit. So
yeah.
But yeah, when I talk to someone else, whether it be in person or via camera, like, cause you can build that rapport. You can read body language a little bit better, at least.
Yes.
So, and that's why we made the transition to video. Initially we're all audio, because my internet was so bad in Turkey, we'd have these really long pauses due to the weird delays. So it was a nightmare to edit. So we have to do something different. We can't just do audio. Let's do Zoom. So we did Zoom in order to have things sync up better.
Mm-hmm,
and then it just stayed because people like faces. So we got way more engagement with video than we did with just audio.
Yeah. And just myself, and I'm trying to bring this more into my episodes, it's just having fun. You know what I mean? Because you got to have some fun. It can't just be all boring, you know? I don't know. I think you can make a lot of things fun, even if it's not a fun task.
Right.
For sure. You can have fun with it. So I'm trying to incorporate that more into my episodes. And, you know, I think overall, and I have actually a podcast editing backlog right now of like 8 episodes that have been just sitting there for a few months, and it's killing me. But I actually hired a firm to handle my editing. So they're helping me do that. And so that's a huge time saver for me.
Hours.
I'm interested to see, because the other thing, I mean, you know this, when you do your own editing, you see a lot of things.
Overcritical. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. You see a lot of things. All right. I'm not going to do that next time. But I think that's so critical because if you just hand it off to somebody and never look at it again, you would never know. And so, I mean, one, yes, we're our worst critic, but there's so much value into actually editing your own content and then just seeing, all right, this is, I'm going to make a choice here and I'm not going to do that again. Or not going to say that again, or, you know, going to be trying to, my biggest thing is try to be more direct and use fewer words to get to the point, you know?
Right. No, that makes sense. Like, yeah. Brevity is yes. key. For me, it's the questions I didn't ask. So if I listen to an yes. episode and I hear something that I didn't hear in the live interaction,
I know
it prompts me after and I'm like, why didn't I ask that question? Like, that would have been a really good question for me to ask. Like, this is what the audience wants to know.
I know.
So it's the, yeah, it's the, I guess being a armchair quarterback, to my original podcast episode.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm sure it's gonna come up here. There's gonna be a ton of things I'm like, why didn't I ask that question?
Yeah, I will say that. I mean, I haven't used it too much recently, but just help doing ChatGPT to help brainstorm a little bit has right. been pretty helpful in the past. Because sometimes, you know, trying to even think of, because what I try to do is I don't want my guests to build the outline. I guess these days I do it collaboratively. We have a 15-minute call. We build it out collaboratively.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then so I know what they want to say. I know what they don't want to say. You know, I have an right. attorney coming on talking about the False Claims Act. And she was actually the one involved with the Georgia Tech.
Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Right. And so I was like, all right, how much can we talk about this? You know?
Right.
And so I think that works pretty well overall. Some people you can't get on at all because they're too busy and they're too high level. But when I can, I like to get them on for a 15-minute session, just brainstorm and go from there.
Right. And see, that's what I fear. So I usually don't do a pre-screen.
Mm-hmm.
I'll talk to you just before, right? Like, I like to come in fresh. Like, I don't want to yeah. ask the questions and then not ask them again.
Yeah.
But B, I'm always afraid of not getting the person back on, right? Like, we had that conversation
yeah.
and then they cancel because they get busy.
Yeah.
As opposed to just getting the initial. But yeah. no, we do have some similarities. Like, right, I have ChatGPT right here, right? It gave me a ton of questions. I asked like maybe two of them.
Yeah. Right.
The conversation just steered us in a different direction. But no, what I've been blessed with is the follow-up. So I usually can get a person back on.
Yeah.
So I can fill in some of those gaps when I have them back on the episode because we've mm-hmm. we've kind of built rapport. They feel comfortable, right? They know I'm not crazy. I know yeah. they're not crazy. And we can have that conversation again, but let's try to fill in some of these gaps. But
right.
it would be way more efficient
yeah.
to do the pre-screen call.
Yeah, I mean, there's multiple ways to do it. You know how it is. Different right. ways.
So what about content creation? So what I've been doing a lot of recently is repurposing content. Like I have yeah. all these episodes in the backlog. I talked to a guest a few months ago, and he brought up, like, you have a ton of gems. It was Jay Salters. Mm-hmm. You were like, you have a ton of gems. Like, mm-hmm. you should be repurposing that. Those should be your shirts. Those should be your clips. Those should be mm-hmm. articles and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm starting to see a lot more of that being generated on your side. So what kind of inspires you to build your content or to be able to reuse it in more interesting ways?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've thought similar because I've had some great episodes and I had three episodes, a series. It was one recording, but it split into three episodes with Dr. Ron Ross from NIST. And there were so many things, so many amazing things he said.
Right.
And I've thought about those episodes and others too. And I completely agree. Huge opportunity there to repurpose content, to release. Because here's the thing. People on YouTube, they're not, they might not see that segment or they might not even find it because your episode title is the overall and not that specific piece, right? So I've thought about, you know, taking the 3 or 4 or 5 minute segment where we talked about something and then putting it out there and linking to the full podcast episode, you know, because you're so right. There are gems inside of there, but we got to make it easier for people to find them.
Right. And I think that's the hardest part because I can't go back to I could, but it'd be very hard to go back to several hundred episodes that were done in Zoom and then pull them into the new platform and try to get them to transcribe. It works to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Because I did do a couple, but then it thinks I'm two different people or I'm just one person.
Right.
Because it wasn't natively built here.
Right.
So like now I make sure I make at least one clip out of every episode. Like I have some kind of short that I can pull out and then repurpose somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Take that transcript and I stick it in ChatGPT and I say, hey, help me whittle this down to a tweet, because that's very hard for me.
Yes. Like,
we've talked about 40,000 characters of stuff and not to fit into 280 in order to pique someone's interest. So like AI has been phenomenal. Yeah. Like, I can't go back. Yeah. I can't live without ChatGPT.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. I use the script. So I record in Riverside, similar to you. And then I pull it into the script. And I mean, now that I have my help doing it, I'm actually saying, hey, let's use the script too. You know, 'cause they're using Adobe Premiere and stuff like that. The script just, it has that functionality that allows you to easily. It's AI, so you can ask it to find segments that are interesting or highlight this specific thing. You don't have to pull it out. You don't have to pull your transcript out into ChatGPT. You just do it natively within the tool. So I think the script for me has been a huge time saver. It also has cool functions of find those uhs and cut them, you know?
I used Zoom and I would put the Zoom video and audio into a program called Shotcut. Mm-hmm. And Shotcut, I would then chop it up to get rid of a lot of that stuff, right?
Yeah.
To the point where I could tell, I could see an before it happened in the crosstalk. Uh-huh. I knew what an looked like.
Yes.
And I was like, this is a nightmare. Like, I can't keep doing this. And now, like you said, I could just literally type it in to the, it's a find me the rights, find me the find me the, you know, whatever was the flavor of the day. And try to chop those things out. So yeah, it has been a time saver. So if you're listening, Riverside FM, you have two spokespeople here, which we would love to do some copy for you. Make that happen. Right. Like, yeah, we would love to make that happen for you. But yeah, I love the tool. And I was put onto the tool by you, Dr. Bert Miller, and Derrick Phillips. I saw all of you using, and I was like, what is that? And then luckily, as I was scrolling through, I think it was Dr. Bert Miller's YouTube, he left a watermark on one. And that is because I didn't want to ask the question. But I saw it so much. I was like, I should know what this is. Like, I had that weird thing where you don't want to ask what you feel is a dumb question.
Right, right.
And then when I saw the watermark, I typed it in and it popped up and I was like, yes, that is it. And I've been on it ever since. Like, I love it. It's the greatest tool ever.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
All right. So hard pivot, because you're a busy man. I got to get you out of here. So outside of work, right? Because there's a lot of stuff that we need to cover in the follow-up episode or two in the future. But outside of that, what are your hobbies? Have you been watching any movies or any books? Like, what are you doing to unwind when you're not doing your 9-to-5, building the brand, building content? You have obviously family time. Like, when you have that 5 minutes. It's free time. What are you doing with it?
Sleeping? No.
Can't sleep.
No. Well, I finally upgraded my computer. So I was running an old 1070 NVIDIA card on that, and so gotcha. I haven't had a whole lot of time to game recently, but
What'd you replace it with? I'm interested.
Yeah. I did a custom build, so I've got. Now that, like, the LEDs in the front and, like, it's pretty cool looking, you know.
The RGB,
Actually, maybe I should put it on my desk, you know. I don't know.
That's what this is right here. Like, you can't see it right now, but yeah, put it on the desk. I did the same thing.
right. Yeah, but I've got a Super Ti, maybe something like that. I was bouncing between the 4070, the 4080, and then the 4070 Ti, and the 4080 went off the shelf, and I was like, that's a little bit more than what I want to spend. But it went off the shelf, and I was like, all right, let's just do the 4070. And it was a micro center, and the line was so long. And then I started thinking, maybe I should go with the 4070 Ti, you know, whatever. Yeah. Like, this line is very long. Spend the extra $200 to $300, whatever. And so I got that, and then, like, these processors, 16 cores, you know, got 64 gigs of RAM in there. It's like crazy.
Gotcha. So, well, that's great for content. Like, I
bumped
up to 64 as well. And 32 would have been fine, but there was a sale on Amazon. I was like, well, I mean.
That's right. I used to be a slickdeals.net guy. And
yeah, I was like,
It's on sale. We got to get it.
right.
Yeah, yeah. But I haven't really played anything yet hardcore with that. So
I mean, you can play anything you want to with that. So you want to run. So we bumped up to a 3060. I was being cheap. So it's a 3060. I think it has 12 gigs of VRAM. Mm-hmm. So like nowhere near now, right? But I was coming from a integrated GPU CPU. Is where I came from. Yeah. So like any upgrade would have been great. Apparently the 1070 is still one of the mass market cards. I'm just like, how's that thing still running? I offended somebody just now. I'm sorry. So I saw the 3060 was on sale and I was like, why not? It's like night and day. But yeah. I know it's not the 40 series or what have you, but everything's prettier. I'm just like, you know what? That was worth it.
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, and the challenge now is to find a game that you know, my son and I can play together. We were playing some games because my background growing up without internet, I remember my dad and my younger brother playing on our local area network because, of course, he wired the house right with Ethernet. And playing Call of Duty, the original Call of Duty on computer, playing in the 16, 24 player characters map, you know, with three people, but we had so much fun.
That's awesome. I would say look at Helldivers. It's like Starship Troopers, basically, or Terminator, depending on which enemy you're fighting. There's robots and there's bugs. It's a dead ringer for Starship Troopers. I play with my son, and it's not, I mean, you're blowing up robots, you're blowing up.
Yeah.
Bugs. So it's not gruesome. It's just fun. Like, cause dumb stuff happens all the time. Like you'll bullet a ricochet off of something or a missile. It's just havoc.
Yeah. Those are the funnest moments though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, recently we took, cause my son, he just turned 10 and it's like, where does the time go? And that's one of the things that I really want to focus on is spending more time with my children because, you know, building the brand, all that stuff, but man, you know, time is going so fast.
Right.
And so I really want to make much more of a dedicated effort this year to spending more time with the family overall, especially Connor, because he's going to be a teenager before we know it. He's not going to think dad's cool anymore. You know, all the stuff that comes supposedly. Right. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah. I mean, it's really hit or miss. Like, I've been fortunate, because I, you know, 20 years in the military, I did miss periods of time, you know, being gone or what have you. But the time did fly. So like now I have an 18-year-old now. She just turned 18. She's going to college next year. It's crazy.
Wow.
Middle son is going to turn 16 soon. He has his permit, so he's learning how to drive. And then the youngest is 9. So same thing, right? So I'm trying to spend, because he's going to be the child that I was around for all the time.
Yeah.
Like you'll have all the memories of me being around. So trying to spend time with all of them, but especially make sure his childhood, I'm not in Iraq or something crazy.
Yeah.
So that's great. So that's the hard balancing act. So how do you come up with a routine or a schedule to balance all of that?
One of the things we've been doing recently is we're dedicating Friday nights to family time.
Okay.
And we call them our family goof off night. And so there was this funny moment when Connor was upstairs and it was Friday and I think I was off. And I was like, all right, Connor, when do you want to start goofing off? He's like, right away. You know, so it comes down to setting a specific time, whether it's an evening or, you know, a block of time or whatever, and staying consistent with that. And for the most part, we've done pretty well with that. And made some really good memories.
That's awesome. So no, that's great. That's great for all listeners. If you have a family or even if you don't have little ones, you have to carve out some time for yourself. It can't be all work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's why Americans don't live as long as most other countries. We burn ourselves out.
Yeah.
Finding that quality time, finding time to spend with your family or with whomever, right?
Right.
Is definitely key, especially now we're, I guess, post-pandemic. Or whatever we call this time period.
Right.
So we can actually go outside and, you know, make contact with people. So No, you brought up some good points. Just as a quick recap, especially when it comes to the social interaction, right? So making those connections on LinkedIn, but then also doing the in-person stuff, the conferences and things of that nature. And I too am trying to do that now that we're out of lockdown. I'm back in the States. I'm trying to make at least one appearance a quarter. Mm-hmm. Get out of my shell. So that's awesome. To know that it's effective, right? Like to do the grinning and gripping, or whatever they call it, the kissing hands and shaking babies.
Sure, sure. Either way.
Right. So no, that's a good tip, as well as the carving out time, right? Whether it be a day or, you know, just a routine or a schedule to be with your family. But also your mentor or your friend who said that you're not working two jobs, right? You're working a job, and then you're building your own brand. You're building your own thing. So it's a different perspective. That's what to say, oh, you know, I'm burning the candle at both ends. I'm tired, but I'm building something that I own, something that will be you when it's all said and done. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
So I thought this was a really good conversation. Like I would love to do this again.
Yeah.
I went off the rails. I had a bunch of structured questions for CMMC. We didn't get there. But
this was much more fun.
It'd be good for a follow-up. But no, I love to see it. What I did not mention at the beginning. So you are also a CISP, but you're an ISSP. There it is. So if you can quickly, like just really quick, because I don't want to hold you any longer. If you quickly explain what that is. For the audience.
Yeah. So it's the engineering professional concentration for the CISSP, and they rebranded. I don't really completely understand, because previously it was the CISSP-ISSCP. Now right. It seems like it stands alone almost, but it, from what I still understand, it is, I could be wrong on this, and double check me. You know, I'm not even going to go there because I think I'm wrong.
<That's>
Look
fine.
It up, folks.
There's tiers to it. So yes. I just, because we have different people on the show. So like Ask a CISP start off with, I want people to ask me questions. But now I have on not only people who have the certification, but people who are in their CIOs or their, you know, CTOs, or they are some other affiliation. But I feel as though it's great value added.
So yeah.
For you are again a tier above, so your CISP plus.
Yes. And I just looked it up. Okay. I wanted to make sure I was right. So it does look like you still need the CISSP, so that's still a prereq.
Okay.
From what I'm understanding, because they changed it recently and it was kind of confusing to me. But in any case, it's focused more around the engineering. Gotcha. And NIST is a big part of the curriculum, which is system security engineering. And that's one of the things I got to talk to Dr. Ron Ross about from NIST, because that is one of his documents that he loves to talk about, and that concept of building security into the engineering process and integrating that, you know? So there's a lot that goes into it, system requirements and things like that. So that's what the ISSEP is all about. I've looked at the ISSMP for a while, which is more the policy side.
Right.
And I'm like, man, I'd love to get that. I just haven't yet.
Well, I mean, when are you going to find the time, right? Eventually. But
last year, I got my master's degree at WGU in 15 days.
Right. We're fellow alumnus, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm a WGU. Same degree.
Awesome, man.
Took me 15 months, though. So.
I don't know. Thankfully, everything went well. I was able to get the CompTIA CISA Plus certification in the first week. And so, like, I figured that was to be the long pole in the tent, because if I didn't get that, didn't pass that was going to take me a lot longer. But thankfully, everything went well. I was able to pull a lot from a different experience and just knock out the assignments. And what I love about WGU is, I mean, just like, it's not time bound. You know, you're not time bound to a lecture schedule. If you know the material, you can just jump in and get it done. And so I saw some other people. I saw this guy on YouTube talking about it. And he was like, I did it in 12 days. It's like, well, he's probably like a genius. I don't know. You know, and then I saw this other guy who, I kind of knew on LinkedIn. And he was like, oh, well, he's a normal guy like me. So maybe I could do a 30-day challenge.
Right.
And was able to knock that out. And I just think it, like, WGU is just such an awesome value. 6-month terms, you pay $5,000, knock out as many courses as you can in that term. And it's like, yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah, it's all a la carte. And for anyone who's listening and who's kind of on the fence, you're able to accelerate because of all of the experience you had, right? You're able to pull from that experience and then go forth and conquer.
Yeah.
You were already at that level. You just needed to finish pretty much your prereqs to, be awarded your degree. Someone like myself, right, who was pursuing their master's, it took about 15. I could have did it in 12, but I was pursuing my PMP in between there as well. Mm-hmm. I didn't have my CSP yet. So WGU, on the flip side, prepped me for my CISSP.
Yeah.
Because the backbone was the CBOC, is the curriculum to get your CSP. So immediately after finishing my my master's, I then took the CSP test and I passed it second time. I passed the first time. It's to say, like, it could go either way. So if you're already experienced, you already have all the knowledge, you can destroy the courses and get through it very fast, because you're not, like you said, bound by having to wait for an instructor to do lectures and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, if you don't have that necessarily all that experience, but you do have, a few years of experience and what have you, you could take a different pace.
Yeah.
But then it preps you to get your CEH, to get your CHFI, to get your CISP eventually, things of that nature. So
it's
awesome. And then this is freebie. So WGU, if you need some spokespeople,
that's won't right.
me do this again.
That's
you
right.
come through with sponsorship. But no, that's awesome. Like I did forget to mention that, because I did see you knocked it out in 15 days, which is tremendous.
Like, yeah. I was, I don't know. I don't think I'm anything special. I mean, I think that anybody could do what I did, but it's like everybody's life situation is different too. You know what I'm saying? Cause my wife, she stays at home with the kids. Like, if I didn't have her taking care of the children and raising them, and cause we homeschool too. And like, so her hands are totally full. But if I also had to, help with the children and all that stuff, and wasn't able to dedicate every night, every weekend to this, I mean, there'd be no way. So I'm really thankful for just the backing, here at home that I have.
Absolutely. Amazing. Yeah, definitely. You got to give credit where credit is due.
That's right.
That's awesome. But that is a phenomenal feat. I'm sure you got a lot of messages afterward. Not only congratulations, but then people asking how you did it, right?
Like, right. Blueprint.
How can I do this?
And that's one thing I'm thinking about. Like, I got to do a YouTube video one day on that. And
That will be a million viewed video, man. It's like people want that type of information. Like I see the most views are usually people giving that type of experience. Like, mm-hmm. I either passed or failed, said whatever, this is how it went, and then you see their numbers fly up.
So, right
but yeah, I don't know where you're gonna squeeze that time in. I don't like, will that be possible, right? But no, this was awesome. I definitely gotta get you back on the show again. Like, when I all things CMMC, I look at your content, I look at Derrick Phillips, I look at Darren King Jr., of course Chris Abacon, one of my co-hosts, and his really good friend, Andrew Wilcox. Like, you were my CMMC kind of roadmap, right? I'm looking at you guys for your content and trying to figure out, like, how can I not only be able to express it as well as you guys do, but also how can I turn that into content to help people? Because ultimately, it's all about giving back to the DIB so they can not lose our secrets and keep us safe. Right? So that's the whole purpose. But no, that's awesome. So we land this plane, so to speak. And then we can tell everybody where to find you. So you can find us at The Other Side of the Firewall. Monday and Tuesday are topics. Wednesday, discussion. Thursdays will be Ask a CISP. So this one will go up in a couple weeks. But when you see it is when you see it, right? Like, you won't know the difference. And then Friday's everything else. So movies, books, games, all that stuff. We like to unwind in the last episode. We now have a newsletter. So the premise is every episode now has an article on LinkedIn for SEO purposes, as well as some audiences don't want to watch or listen, they want to read. So now we have a one-stop shop where the article has the video and the audio embedded, and then you can also read it. So whatever sense you want to use on this thing, you can. And then once a week, we do the weekly rundown, which is also the name of the Friday episode, where we talk about nothing cyber-related. But the weekly rundown newsletter gives you a recap of all the things we talked about during the week. So it's a one-stop shop that gets pushed to your inbox. So please subscribe if you have not already. Mm-hmm. And then you can find us on all the social medias that go by our name. You can find us either at The Other Side of the Firewall or The Other Side of the FW or Ask a CISP on every platform you can think of, except for TikTok. I only have one video because they keep suspending my account, probably because I talk bad about them. That's fine. I'm going to figure it out. And then where can they find you, Jacob?
Yep. You can find me on LinkedIn, Jacob Hill, and grcacademy.io as well. And then if you want to look up my podcast, just search for the GRC Academy podcast.
Absolutely. And it will be tagged. All the above will be in our description. They'll all be tagged, and I'll probably push this out with one of your episodes as well. Because I think I asked for questions, which I asked too late. So it's fine, audience. But next time I'm going to project a couple weeks so you can give me your questions to ask the interviewee. But no, you're doing great things out there. So definitely look out for Jacob Hill and all of his projects, especially the GRC Academy podcast. So kept it very simple. So check out all of his content. Again, check us out on all the platforms. We're on pretty much everything now. Stay safe, stay secure.
Thank you so much for having me on.
No problem.